A ray gun, Coggins repeated.
It's a laser, Scheib corrected. Hunching forward eagerly in his chair, he went on. Its beam can reach out 100 miles or so from the plane and hit the missile while it's in boost phase, deposit a megawatt or more of energy on a square inch of the missile's skin for a second or so, and it burns through the aluminum skin. The missile explodes.
But the missile isn't standing still for you.
Scheib let a tight smile crease his face. That laser beam strikes with the speed of light. Nothing in the universe goes faster. In the time it takes the beam to cover 1,000 miles, the missile moves maybe 1 foot. Coggins blinked down the table at the general, absorbing this information.
And the beam blows up the missile?
It burns through the missile's skin and goes through to the propellant tanks, Scheib replied. Remember what happened to the Space Shuttle Challenger? The way it exploded when its propellant tank burned through? Boom! That's what happens to a missile when that laser beam hits it. General Higgins asked, You said the laser plane is in Alaska?
At Elmendorf Air Force Base, sir. The evaluation program calls for tests in a foul weather environment.
With a huff, Higgins muttered, Plenty of foul weather up there, God knows.
The plane operates above the weather, of course, 40,000-foot altitude or higher.
Then what's the point of a foul weather environment? Coggins asked.
To make sure the plane can operate under 0-0 conditions. Make certain it can get off the ground and up to its operational altitude no matter what the weather conditions are on the ground. Able One has to be able to react to a missile threat regardless of the weather where it's based.
Can you get the plane to a spot where it could intercept the North Korean missiles? General Higgins asked.
Scheib pecked briefly at the keyboard of his laptop, checked his wristwatch, then looked up. According to its schedule, it's just about to take off from Elmendorf for a test flight over the northern Pacific. There's a 5-hour time difference between here and Alaska.
General Higgins glanced at Zuri Coggins, who nodded. All right, said the general. It isn't a test flight anymore. Get that bird to a spot where it can shoot down those goddamn missiles.
Scheib blinked once. We'll have to set up a couple of air-to-air refuelings.
Do it, said Higgins.
Yes, sir, Scheib snapped.
Without violating North Korean airspace, Coggins added, or Chinese airspace.
I understand.
Coggins gave Scheib an appraising look. Can your plane do the job?
The general hesitated for a heartbeat, then replied, I'll need a direct communications link to the plane.
Higgins nodded. You'll get the comm link. Can the plane do the job?
Yes, sir, I believe it can.
It better, General Higgins growled.
Pasadena, California, Hartoonian residence. It was a modest split-level house on the cul-de-sac at the end of a quiet tree-lined street. The Hartoonian family had lived in it for nearly 16 years, ever since their first daughter had been born. Even with the separation and now the divorce proceedings, Sylvia Hartoonian had held on to the house. She had raised her daughters here, and she had no intention of moving them away from their school, their friends, and the safety of the only home they'd ever known. Sylvia was a determined woman. She and Harry had been drifting apart for years. At first, she thought it was his job at Anson Aerospace. He spent more hours at that laboratory than he did at home. Usually, he left for work before the sun came up and arrived home long after the girls had gone to bed. Sylvia had to raise their daughters by herself, just about. Then Harry started going out to the Mojave Desert. Test operations, he claimed. Classified work, he couldn't tell her anything about it. He'd be gone for several days at a time. Weekends, sometimes.